Today's talk is a continuation of last week's topic, healing our fears of the energy exchanges that we fear. To recap a couple of key points to that is I see everything as an energy exchange experience. Energy exchange experience. Everything that we see, we touch, we taste, we hear are energy exchanges. Everything we think about is an energy exchange. Everything we speak about or to is an energy exchange. The second main point is that I believe that all of us act in our own self-interest according to our level of awareness. It's true of a caveman, it's true of a saint, and all of us that are in between those two conditions. And the third point is the energy model that I developed some years ago, I think applies to life. There are half a dozen or so different ideas. Last week I spoke about the first thing, is energy acquisition. That is a natural thing that we use in order to live, in order to survive, in order to thrive. We do it as infants, we do it as adults, we do it all the time up until we give up our physical bodies. The second point I covered was about preserving the energy that we acquired. You know, this is where we try to protect what we have, our possessions, our property, our things, our identity, our money, our friends, our family. It's all about preserving the energy that we believe we have. The third phase in my energy model of life is energy translation. Energy translation. And this step seems to me to require a certain level of intelligence to be effective. The more intelligence and awareness that we have, the more effective we can be at this. Think of it this way. We acquire or receive an environmental signal, right? An environmental signal is an energy pattern. If we're talking about seeing it, then it's going to be reflected light that penetrates our eye, and then it's going to be processed and by our brain. So we're going to perceive these environmental signals, hearing or so on. We're going to use our five senses and other senses. How many there are, I'm not sure. I guess nobody is, but clearly we have more than five senses. And the purpose of energy translation is to modify the signal, those energy forms that come into our field, into forms that are easily used, more easily and readily, that will support our growth, our nutrition, our nourishment, our healing, our protection, our fulfillment of need, our work, our survival. I think that is really the underlying purpose of why we do that. And you can say, I process these signals in an effort to increase my chances of survival and thriving. I think so. So if translating energy has the purpose of supporting our well-being, but because our intelligence, our intellect, our mind, our ego is involved, now we're not necessarily as effective as we wish we were, because we have to process that. And a lot of our success in life is due to our processing capability. Processing capability is another way of saying our translation abilities. So you go, I want to understand more. I want to process this information more accurately. Sure. When we give meaning to an experience, we're translating that experience. When we chew and digest food, we're translating it. When we move or create something, we're translating energy into movement or the thing that we're creating. Our habits of translation, they're learned, either filter signals in or they filter certain signals out according to their level of resonance with the meanings that our mind has already established and holds an inventory. No, this, I don't understand this. And it's almost as if they have to be compared to what we currently believe to be true or reality or what we accept as good, And if it doesn't pass that test, it gets filtered out or rejected. Like, The bad news about this is that in present time, today, right now, we're using filters that we put in place when we were little kids, when we were little girls or little boys. It's like, we decided and said, this is good, this is bad, I like this, I hate this, I love this, I don't like this, I want to be closer to this, I want to be further away from this, I want to embrace this, I fear this. And so a lot of these filters, and then our habit of translation was established way long ago, oftentimes in stressful situations, as children were already operating with perhaps a lower level of awareness about how life works, and we're in the environment of people who are malfunctioning, and we're under stress, they're under stress, and then we make rules of life, that could be a problem. So this idea that today, right now, if we're using way old information that is out of context, not really relevant, we're not really processing information as effectively as we could. We're not using today's intellect that we've developed. We're, in fact, using our child intellect. To me, this oftentimes can explain some of the frustration that individuals feel. You know, I'm doing something, all of a sudden things are not going well, and you watch and you go, whoa, that guy went from a 70-year-old man to a 5-year-old boy having a tantrum. You go, wow, that's interesting. And I think most of us can feel that in ourselves when it occurs. We're like, whoa, where did that come from? It came from childhood. If we've developed the mindset that the world and the people in it are hostile or opposed to us, we're going to have the habit of translating signals into threats, slights, insults, opposition, or outright enmity. What are we going to do? We're going to be defensive and or aggressive, depending on whether we think we can fight the threat that we've created through our perception and translation, or we need to run away from it. Oh, no, I can't deal with that. I got to get out of here. Mental translation is essential. It's humanly necessary, and it's our attempt to understand. We want to understand stuff. Why? Because if I can understand things, I guess my chances of surviving are greater. Of course. So giving meaning to signals is how we go, I understand what this means. Even though we don't understand it. If you've ever been in a situation at a party and it's hard to hear, maybe people are talking, and somebody is saying something, and you're not sure, but other people are nodding in agreement or smiling or laughing, you're like, yeah, and we do the same thing. Not because we understood, but because we think in order to fit in, we're going to act like we were successfully translated whatever that comment was, just the way other people around us did. If somebody waves at us, that's a signal. What does it mean? If somebody gives us the finger, what does it mean? If somebody says, I love you, what does it mean? If somebody calls us names, what does it mean? When we struggle to give meaning to words of, a foreign language, what does that mean? Your parents, my parents, were not what I would call extremely or very, or maybe even moderately, effective at parenting. What does that mean? You hear a song and you can sing it on key. What does that mean? You hear a song and you can dance to it, and you can enjoy dancing to it. What does that mean? The thought of death, the thought of life, the thoughts of health, thoughts of illness, are environmentally triggered signals. What do they mean? Just from those few questions, you're like, doesn't it seem like energy translation is a wonderfully creative process? Just think, somebody waves at us. What does that mean? I mean, if we wanted to use our imagination and give a series of meanings to it, let me just make a list. We could really have fun. What does that mean? And you know, like, wow, wow. And we settle on one most likely meaning out of habit. So we're very creative, and we have an expansion of that ability to translate, and that's really what we want to do, is to be able to translate things, not into saber-toothed tigers. Most of us can do that very readily. What we want to do is I want to see if I can translate it into something else. I want to develop that habit of developing things, my translations, into something more benevolent. This is where our minds can do great things if our consciousness and our mind cooperate to do that. But if our minds and our egos are in control and they've been vibrating at lower levels, lower frequencies, we're going to be exhibiting behaviors that suggest that we're in the survival mode. I'm trying to survive. I'm trying to survive. No matter, that person could be living in the lap of luxury, but if their ego and their mind is translating everything into threats, they're going to be in the survival mode. And a lot of their thinking, a lot of their behavior will be about them, will be self-serving, about them. If we can raise our consciousnesses to know and to feel that divine consciousness is just like Christ described in Letter 1 of Christ's Returns Reveal Startling Truth, really seeking to deliver everything we need, all the time. It's like, wow. So my struggling is, it's largely unnecessary. Maybe completely unnecessary. If we can get into that place of knowing, I've got this protective shield, I've got this healing shield, I've got this shield that's supporting my growth, my nutrition and nourishment, the fulfillment of my need, my work, survival, I got this shield that is supporting all of those things, well, you know what? Then I'm going to translate these signals in my environment in a completely different way. Why? And the result is going to be my life is going to be, and your life is going to be more peaceful, loving, happy, successful. I get out of the dog-eat-dog sort of mode of operation, survival, because I realize I have the most powerful force in the universe working for me and working for you. I believe this to be true. If we continue to reach out in thought and feeling for what we want without creating resistance in ourselves and others, we are guaranteed success. Success is inevitable. Keep reaching, 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 and if there's no resistance, ultimately, we're going to be successful. So that statement really touches upon energy acquisition and energy translation. A lot of our resistance comes from comparing our present state with, this is not what I desire. I desire something else, and we find fault. Finding fault with our present state doesn't make the desired state appear quicker. In fact, just the opposite. Finding fault is rejection. And guess what? Rejection is resistance. It's like, and that slows down our forward progress. If we have negative beliefs about ourselves, or the other side of the coin, exaggerated beliefs about our ability to translate signals, both those signals that originate externally, you know, in our environment, somebody saying something to us or the light that's coming to us or something that we feel coming from us internally, we're going to have fears because we're going to recognize on one level or another, this is, you know, something is wrong here. Something is out of balance. Something is not right. We're going to fear that we're not capable. So an environmental signal that comes in, we can process it as a demand, and then we're going to, this is too big for me to handle. Or we're going to be confused because we overestimated our abilities. Well, if I'm the greatest person on the planet, I'm confused. How come what I do, what I say, the actions I take, the words I express result in unwanted consequences? Things get discombobulated. Things go awry. Things turn into a mess. You might hear this sort of thing in our self-talk. It could be something like, oh, I don't understand. I'm struggling to get it. It's too complicated. It's too hard. I don't have enough energy. Or, that other side of the coin, I know this. I already know that. I know this. And we prevent the acquisition of more understanding. But then we say, I know this. But then why does it end up in a disaster so often? In each of the first three steps of the energy model, stress is often increased by the beliefs that we, as individuals, are working on. Because we believe, I'm working on my own. There's no support. It's me against the world. I'm just a one little person. And by not realizing or accepting that we're being supported by the divine, it's real easy to get anxious and feel abandoned, alone, underpowered. But if we really understood that idea, that divine consciousness is seeking to provide us with all the energy that we need, all the energy that we need for our growth, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, and survival, we might be able to relax more and be less stressed. If we're alone, the ego urge to protect what we think we have acquired on our own is going to drive us to do unusual and oftentimes harmful behaviors. We're also going to be stressed out because our translation is going to make us feel and actually be vulnerable to the loss of energy, because it's going to aggravate other people the way we behave, thinking we're the only people on the planet, and you know, and then all of a sudden they go, wait a minute, they're going to respond as if we're the saber-toothed tiger. So we're going to be vulnerable to the loss of energy, and when we start losing energy, it actually degrades our ability to translate signals effectively. When we go into stress, we become less smart. Another way of saying that is our ability to process signals gets degraded. Our ability to translate gets degraded. Everything that I've said so far gets me to conclude this, that getting energy and losing energy are the polar opposites that control human behavior. If we couldn't look at any other things, just those two, getting energy and the fear of losing energy, you go, wow, that pretty much explains a lot of what I do. It's a lot of what I don't do. It explains a lot of what they do and don't do. Getting energy and losing energy. We will do almost anything to acquire energy. Notice any wars going on this planet? That's not about right or wrong. That's about energy acquisition. Being the big dog. And we're going to do almost anything to avoid losing energy. Humans will kill to acquire energy, and we will kill people and things to avoid losing energy. The strangest thing of all, the energy that we most crave is the completely abundant and completely accessible energy of divine consciousness. It's here. It's here. It's not oil. It's not uranium. It's not gold. It's not money. It's the energy of divine consciousness. And it can't be lost, and it can't be taken from us. Now, can we lose it? Well, in the sense that we don't know we have it. It's like, do you have money? No. But if a person doesn't know he has what he's looking for, he might as well not have it. But it can't really be lost or taken from us. You may have noticed that with the first three steps of the energy model of life, energy acquisition, energy preservation, energy translation, that we can do a lot of that behind the scenes. We can do a lot of that without people noticing. That's much less likely to work with the fourth step, energy expression. Because as this stuff starts to move out from us, as we start to express energy and cause effects, other people are going to notice it. Whether we're creating something or baking something or saying something or writing something or making it publicly available, we're going to be noticed. Energy expression is that when and the where, and also the how and the what, we apply the energies that we've acquired, we've preserved and protected and translated, and we're going to now put them into physical form or physical manifestation. We're going to try to physically manifest the goals we choose. You know, it's one thing to be writing a book. You know, when you go, I've got an idea. Writing a book. And it's like, no problem so far. It's like, okay, now I'm going to reveal this to the public. Different ballgame entirely. As our activities become more visible to ourselves and others, you know, when we look at it, then we're going to be subjected to other energy flows. And in order to protect our sense of individuality, our sense of identity, our belief about who we are, our egos are going to seek to defend us from any criticism, any judgment, any emotional attack, any name-calling, any denigration or belittlement or sarcasm, and even physical attack that may arise from other people. Like, ooh, yeah, if I tell other people about that, they could ridicule me, humiliate me, call me names, make fun of me. It's like, I'm not going to express myself to them. The problem is, other people are driven by their egos, just like we are, to be better than us. We want to be better than them, they want to be better than us. So we got a game going on here. If we allow the egos to be like the owners of the game and controllers of us, we'll be like the players on the field, and our egos are sitting up in the boxes, do more, you know, hurt them more, dominate them more, overwhelm them more. Like, ugh. And on a Sunday afternoon, this is going to be happening on football fields throughout America. That same kind of idea. And so, in order to be better than somebody else, people are going to choose to use a bunch of different strategies or tools, energy tools, criticism, sarcasm, judgmentalism, rejection, denigration, enmity, intolerance, hatred, jealousy, aggression, violent impulses, thieving, falsehood, double and devious dealings, and slander, all geared to control, diminish, overwhelm, and dominate other people. And other people are just like us. They use the same tools that we have used. It's like, if we've been hurt by those energies in the past, and I'm pretty sure the answer is, yep, we have. And if we've hurt other people by using those energies in the past, and I think also we've done that. And if we're easily hurt or offended today, now, the solution is to be very, very careful about expressing our energies. And the result, we might not express ourselves and energy very effectively. That sensitivity we feel and the hurt we anticipate, if I say, and we're going to end up holding ourselves back in avoidance of that anticipated hurt that we think is going to be delivered by other people and by ourselves through self-criticism. Part of the problem that we have to deal with regard to energy expression is our motivation for energy expression. Why are we doing it? Why are we doing it? Imagine that we have at least three advisors trying to influence our thoughts, our feelings, our words, and actions. Consider this. The ego is the most dominant advisor. It's the one that speaks with the loudest voice in meetings, in your head. It has the narrowest worldview. It's primarily concerned with self and appearances, its own four driving needs, defense against criticism and emotional and physical attack, and being better than, getting more, preventing other people from taking energy, and not much else. The focus is largely on its own self-interest and very little or no regard for the self-interest of other people or things such as animals and the planet. It feels to me, though, maybe the second advisor, I'll call the psyche, has a foot in both camps. It's kind of like a middle person, but it's trying to bridge the gap between the ego and the other advisor, a higher vibration advisor, the soul. Now, it seems to me that the psyche may or may not feel the pull of the soul as being powerful, but it might be aware, based upon history of your life, that all the activities of the ego said, do this, do that, don't do this, and do this, and all that beating us up and beating other people and trying to get over on other people and doing other things, trying to be better than and being called worse than alternatively. And it's like, wait a minute. You know what? That ego, that advice provided by that advisor has not produced the joy, the health, the happiness that we've been desiring. That knowing, there's got to be something more. There's got to be something better, is the sense of the presence of the soul. So, if the soul is our individualized piece of divine consciousness, you go, then I suggest we could look at it in this scenario as the third advisor, that the ego, the psyche, and this highly evolved, unbelievably powerful, wise, loving advisor. Imagine that. In a meeting, we'd have to be very quiet in order to recognize the soul's contribution. Why? Because it speaks with a still, small voice. It doesn't yell. It doesn't berate us. It doesn't try to dominate. It doesn't try to overwhelm. It quietly and gently provides its knowledge, its wisdom to us. It's like, maybe the soul is always speaking to us. Or maybe it's speaking really frequently, but because our minds are so noisy, monkey chattering, and the ego is like, do this and do this, and you got to do more, and you know, what's wrong with you? And all that. It's like, we can't hear it. We can't hear it. And because we can't hear it, because of all that other noise, the value of that input from the soul is missed. I didn't hear it. I didn't hear it. No. How could you hear it if your head is sounds like a stadium on a Sunday afternoon in a football game and the soul is whispering to us, trying to protect, help us heal, fill our needs, help us grow, nurture, nourish us. If the ego says, we must at all times express our energy to be bigger, better, stronger, richer, more influential, more powerful than others, so we can dominate them. Because otherwise, we might be dominated. Most normal human beings are going to go, I got misgivings about that approach to life. That's the game of life is all about dominating and overwhelming everything and everybody every moment. Wow, you can imagine what that's like. That's like war. Ooh, not that good for the body. And if we've got to be better than somebody else, we are actually at effect. We're not at cause. We're at effect. You know why? Because now we're reacting to somebody else's behaviors, their achievements. If they're ahead of us in line or ahead of us in some sort of standing or ahead of us in some sort of perceived status, now their position causes us to behave in a certain way. Said another way, that person controls us by dictating what the game is and how success is measured. And the odd thing is, the other person may not even be aware that the game is on. This is about our perception, our translation that now drives us in these behaviors. Like, I didn't know you were competing with me. I didn't know I was a saber-toothed tiger, is what the other person might say. When we begin to realize that the ego and ego consciousness are the results of the energy acquisition and energy translation by us and by others who told us, maybe parents and teachers and other people who tell us what life is all about, and you got to do it this way, once we start to recognize that, wait a minute, a lot of stuff I heard came from people who were ego-dominated, and as they're explaining the game of life and saying, the game of life is this way, it's like, that's ego-dominated. When we start to become aware of that, it's like, let me think about this. We can mitigate its influence. We can reduce its power in the mind meetings that go on all the time when we have these internal conversations and when we relate to other people and things. You can hear it in other people. Maybe you can hear it in yourself. You hear it as a blowhard, a lot of hot air, a lot of talk and posturing like a bully on a playground field, right? But as we recognize what this is, we don't need to react to it. Our ego is saying, yes, you do. You got to react to it. You got to dominate the other person who is trying to dominate you. But on a higher level, psyche and soul level, we could say, no, I see what's happening. We can become more balanced in our thinking. We can tend to respond and create more of what we want instead of reacting to these other circumstances. We become more causative and less at effect. When we can heal our fears of expressing ourselves in the world, we can, through trial and error, develop effectiveness in expressing. How are you going to become better at anything? Practice. What does that involve? Trial and error. Yep. Painting, drawing, cooking, walking, riding, bicycles, doing anything, learning a language, anything takes practice. And if you're going to practice, there's going to be, I'll try this, whoops, that's not what I had in mind. There's trial and error. And if you accept that as necessary to developing effectiveness in expressing, just like everything else, we can relax a little bit. Because we can know this, we reap what we sow, we can learn that our expressions are really seeds that we're sowing. And if we sow those seeds, if we express ourselves with the intention of helping other people, supporting their growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, survival, like, I think we can be assured and we can relax about it that the harvest we're going to receive is in harmony with our desires. We do want to be supported in our growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, and so on. We do want that. And if we do it for another, it's coming back to us. One of the main fears related to expression is that we think we have to acquire and accept the energy expressions of other people coming at us when they judge our expressions. It's as if, if I express myself and then somebody has a reaction to it or a response to it and tells me it was good or it's bad, I have to accept that as a consequence of my expression. That's not true. Other people's reactions to our expressions is almost completely due to their level of awareness, their consciousness, and only partly due to our consciousness. If another person's emotional state is high or low, guess what? Their interpretations of our expressions are going to be high vibration or low vibration. In other words, their expressions about what we said or did or created are about them much more than they are about us. And when we recognize that, we don't take their expressions personally. We go, they created this expression because of the way they acquired energy, preserved their energy, and translated it, and now they're saying this about us, or they're feeling this about us. We don't have to take it personally. It's not about us. It's almost entirely about them. And when we start to disconnect those things, it's like, I had to take everything they said about me as gospel. Yeah, that's a disadvantage. We're going to want to heal that tendency. But how do we do that? If we've learned that as children to make everything about us, we're going to be disadvantaged until we heal those false connections. Because those false connections still link us to our parents' misemotion and malfunctioning. They link us to our siblings' malfunctioning and misemotion. They link us to other people's malfunctioning and misemotion. Because it was about me. It was about me. It was about me. No, it wasn't. It was about their self-interest according to their level of awareness. That's what that self-expression was. Exactly. When we really understand that their behaviors are largely their egos driving their needs, we're going to find it easier to release them and ourselves from those experiences and the habits we've developed in order to keep ourselves safe and protected. It's easy enough to see the next phase of energy model as energy release in our lives. I just exhaled. Exhalation, other bodily functions of excretion, cleaning house, taking out the garbage, spring cleaning, tidying up the closet, and a bunch of other things are obvious examples of energy release. Letting go of what no longer serves us is essential to health. Otherwise, we're going to be adding encumbrances and stress to our bodies, our immune system, our functioning, and just our everyday environment. Releasing from the need to possess things, those things that we can no longer use, we can no longer get value from them. If we can release them, that's going to be good for our energy flow. How effective are you at releasing? here are a few ways to measure this. Just consider these ideas about energy flow. Do you tend to be constipated? Ooh, that's pretty personal. Do you tend to be overweight? Do you tend to have clutter in your spaces, like your home, your refrigerator, your garage, your car, your office, your closets? Is your closet filled with clothing you haven't worn in years? Does the self-talk tell you to hold on to things just in case you might need them in the next decade or two? Do you have trouble distinguishing relative value of things? I don't know if I should throw this away or keep it. All right, I'll keep it. I'll keep it. So you end up tending to keep everything. Do you have memories of experience from childhood where there was not enough stuff? Maybe like food or clothing or anything else. And are you still behaving to trying to overcome that? Does the accumulation of stuff in your environment resemble, let's say, a bird trying to gather twigs to build a nest? I got to build a nest. I got to have all this stuff around me in an effort to become secure, to feel safe. All these piles. I feel good about it. It makes me feel safe. So, is that stuff used to build a container, like a womb or a nest, that makes you feel safe and secure? Are you failing to see the opportunities to fulfill somebody else's needs by donating things that have lost their value to you? Do you have a core belief that scarcity is real? It's not, by the way, but we get taught that, and we can learn that, and we can believe that. Have you not yet learned this idea that supply is abundant, always accessible, because it's consciousness. It's not stuff. It's consciousness. And we access consciousness through our own consciousness, and we can shape it into stuff as we will. How can we release energy if any of these statements is true? Give it away. Give it away. Start an energy flow, an energy movement. Look for items in your inventory. Inventory. What is that? In your clothes, shoes, pots and pans, books, etc. Even your thoughts. Feelings that you can no longer use. Give them away. Not to the next door neighbor, your anger. You don't do that. You recycle it. Here, God. Here, Christ. Here, divine consciousness. Yeah, I'd like you to recycle this. Recycle these feelings. You could ask yourself when you walk around in your own environment as you're looking in these various areas, closets and so on, would this have more value to somebody else? How can I gift this to somebody else? You know, as you start this flow, as you plant this seed, you're going to get it back. In the old days of attraction, it was nature abhors a vacuum. So clean out your closet, empty that, and then you'll notice that space filling up again with more desirable clothing or objects. When you look at it, you can say, you know, it's pretty apparent you could be releasing energy. You're also going to be expressing energy, the energy of generosity. Oh, I'm planting a seed of generosity. I wonder what my harvest will be. Yep, generosity. Caring and nurturing. Ooh, what will your harvest be? Caring and nurturing. I don't know about you, but I would like more generosity coming from me and coming to me. Coming from me, coming to me. And that's the order. That's the sequence. We sow, then we reap. We plant, and then we harvest. Your thoughtfulness, that's the seed that you're sowing. And that's a mighty good thing. If we see objects as separate or distinct objects, then, I think it's going to be much more difficult for us to release them because we're going to think they can't be replaced. But if we realize that objects are just like particles in a stream of energy, in a flow of energy, continually moving toward being part of the truth of existence, that those particles, everything in our environment, are moving and trying to become part of growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, survival. You go, oh yeah, that's why I acquired it, and now that it's lost that value, maybe it will serve one of those roles for somebody else. When we understand that, we go, well, now I can appreciate that this thing is naturally and a divinely designed purpose to the flow. Then all of a sudden, okay, that helps me to move it instead of resist moving it. Now I can let it go. Developing our trust will impact every single phase of the energy model of life. Trust will make us more open and receptive, because we know this energy flow is supporting all those different areas of our lives. We're going to be less anxious, and we're going to allow divine consciousness to support us in all of those ways. The final phase of my energy model of life is closure. Closure. This is where we attain a state of being satisfied with our efforts. Doesn't mean we got everything we wanted, but we get to a point of balance. We recognize that we did what we could to cause desirable results, desirable effects, and at that time, we couldn't have done any better. So in order to achieve this balanced state, we often have to use forgiveness, forgiveness of ourselves, because if we didn't hit a home run, if we didn't do the best that was possible, we did the best we could, we did the best that was possible for us, we're going to want to forgive ourselves and others. In other cases, I think remorse will help us to achieve balance. Feel the pain that our trial and error may have caused for somebody else. There's a real tendency in religions and cultures to hold on to guilt, regret, or anger over perceived injustice. But that hinders us, and it holds us back and reduces our ease and willingness to participate in the normal energy model processes. If we think that end result of trying to cause desirable results is going to backfire, it's going to cause us bad feelings about ourselves and other people, but I'm not going to do that. Every time I try, it's like putting my hand on a hot stove. I'm not doing that. Every time I try, it results in pain for me and other people. Negative consequence. I'm not doing it. Mm-mm. It seems to me that that concept, the fear of bad feelings about ourselves when we start getting engaged energetically in a process, doing something, cleaning the closet, that sort of thing, and think that it's inevitable. I'm going to feel bad about myself if I try to undertake this. I think that's a main factor in procrastination. If we can get into self-acceptance for what we've done up to that point, we're not done. We're trying to be more effective, more effective, more effective. That's the game. It's not good or bad. And we don't have to punish ourselves for any errors that came up during our trial or error. Was I effective? Was as I wanted to be? Or is our opportunity to be more effective? Okay, that's what I'm going to try to do next time. My next effort, my next try, is going to be aimed at being more effective, not at beating myself up, causing myself pain. And if we can accept our own humanity, the way we learn and the way we grow, we're going to be closer to achieving that balanced state of closure. I'd like to end the service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. if we can make that real for us, our anxiety level has got to go down, 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 down. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.